Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Hey everyone, it's Hamish from the Young Investors Podcast. Myself and Brandon are excited to bring you your weekly rundown of the latest business and investing news from around the world. A quick reminder before we get started, any advice provided by Brandon is general and does not consider your financial situation, needs, or objectives, so consider whether it's appropriate for you. Brandon van der Kolk is authorized to provide general financial product advice in Australia and is authorized representative number 1305795 of Guideway Financial Services Proprietary Limited, AFSL number 420367. Please see the description box for Brandon's financial services guide. Past performance is not a reliable indication of future investment returns. But with that said, let's get into another episode of the Young Investors Podcast.
All right, guys, welcome back to the next episode. Hello, Hamish.
Hello.
The next episode of the Young Investors Podcast. What's going on, mate?
Oh, not a lot. I've been looking after Lucy with her broken knee, or not broken knee, but after her ACL surgery. And she was kind of awake all night last night. So I'm kind of tired, but that's okay. We push on.
We push on. How did it all go?
It's all good. And she's actually been recovering relatively quickly. So usually I think for the first 2 weeks, they really don't use the leg at all, but she is starting to put a little bit of weight on it. So, hopefully the recovery is not super long, but it is supposed to be 2 to 3 months. So, you know, I'm preparing for the fact that it's going to be long.
She's a very active dog. She likes to jump around, doesn't she? How's she taking it? Does she have to be in a crate?
I think it's been so painful that she hasn't really been using it yet. But the tough bit will be when it starts to get a little bit better and she thinks she has more confidence in it than she probably should. Mm. That's going to be really difficult to contain her because she's such as you said, she's such an energetic dog. We'll cross that bridge when it comes.
Oh, hopefully she recovers quickly. Hmm. She's a very happy dog. I want to see that happiness back.
Yeah. What's
all right, guys? Well, getting it. We are doing the news today, and earnings has started, which is exciting. So, literally about a couple of hours ago from when we're recording this, Tesla released their earnings report. So we'll have to go through that. Also, Netflix. Hamish, you're going to be talking about Netflix. They always release early. And then we've also got another couple of stories. One about the 737 MAX. Yes, the one where the doors blow off, apparently. And then one more story if we've got the time for it. So should be a good episode. I'm keen.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that said, today's episode is brought to you by Seeking Alpha, your one-stop shop for stock analysis, market data, and news. Access expert analysis and news for thousands of stocks. View buy, hold, and sell ratings from members, Wall Street analysts, and Seeking Alpha's own algorithm. Screen for stocks using a variety of fundamental and technical analysis metrics. Access 10 years of financial data and company filings. And manage your portfolio by tracking your investments with price alerts so you never miss a buying opportunity again. Click the link in the episode description or head directly to seekingalpha.me/younginvestors to try Seeking Alpha free for 7 days. Do you want to take us through to start off? Let's start with some earnings. Take us through Tesla. What's been going on?
Okay, yeah, I'll try and keep this snappy. Tell me if I'm dragging things on, and I'll pick up the pace.
Yeah.
But we already know about for Tesla, we got their Q4 earnings. We already know about their production and delivery. So their total production for Q4 was 494,989 cars. So that was up 13% year over year. And then their deliveries were 484,507 vehicles, up 20% year over year. So they're delivering more and more cars every year, Hamish, which is a good sign for a company that makes cars. So how did they go financially? Well, they had their revenue came in at about $25 billion. But this is interesting because it's only up 3% year over year. So yeah, not as much growth. Where's that 50% growth that Elon keeps promising?
I was just about to say 50% for the foreseeable future, righto? No, but I mean, I don't think it should be overly surprising an auto business probably relies largely on a lot of people financing their vehicles being kind of impacted by rising interest rates. It's probably I'm sure plays some role in this. It's actually been surprising that their growth didn't slow earlier. For when I was kind of looking at Tesla, it was, watching interest rates rise and they were still posting. And up until now, I think, right, they've still been posting really, really strong revenue numbers. So,
yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yep, up until now. So, yeah, $25 billion was their total revenue. That's up 3% year over year. Their automotive revenue, which is the vast majority, came in at $21.5 billion. So that was only up 1% year over year.
Right.
So pretty flat. Gross profit was down 23% year over year in Q4.
Ouch.
Operating expenses were up 27%. And operating income came in at $2 billion, down 47% year over year. So people were not too happy about it. Their operating margin fell from 16% to 8.2%. They halved it. Halved their operating margin. So Tesla go on to comment as to why these results happened. Some people were shocked. Some people were not as shocked. So why did this happen? Well, they noted that the main factor in dragging things down was their reduced vehicle average selling price, due to their deliberate price markdowns and also the mix of cars. They're selling more of their cheaper cars. They also had an increase in operating expenses, partly driven by AI and other R&D projects. They also had lower full self-driving revenue recognition year over year due to full self-driving beta, the wide release in North America, which happened in Q4 of 2022. So that propped up 2022's Q4.
Yeah.
They also noted that there was a big cost in the Cybertruck production ramp. And then on the positive side, they had lower cost per vehicle. So raw materials and logistics costs, that kind of stuff was cheaper for them, which is good. In fact, they noted that cost of goods sold per vehicle declined sequentially to slightly above $36,000.
Right.
So that's pretty cool. Yep. That's been trending down from about $40,000 over the past little while. They also had, obviously, on the plus side, growth in vehicle deliveries and also gross profit growth in energy generation and storage. So overall, the main reason, what I take from that is the main reason that operating margins have fallen so far is because of what they decided to do with their pricing. They decided to lower pricing.
Yeah, interesting. It is. I'm glad you included some of those details because it is interesting to see that they were still able to lower the cost per vehicle despite some of the considerable cost pressures that that the US has seen over the past couple of years or the last past 12 months. So that was really interesting to see because that would have been my guess as to why margins declined was they've seen some kind of dramatic increase in the cost of their vehicles. But it's interesting to see kind of the breakdown of what actually happened.
Yeah, I'm trying to... So in Q4 2022, the cost of goods sold per vehicle was about $39,500, Q4 2022.
Yeah.
So they've dropped that to, now just over $36,000, which is... That's pretty decent considering you're making, 1.8 million cars?
Yeah.
And it adds up.
That's a massive decline, yeah. Yeah.
Mm, yeah, so and they keep iterating. That's part of their ethos.
Mm.
Okay, in terms of the other parts of their business, their solar deployed, that reduced by 59% year over year to just 41 megawatts. So their solar business not doing so hot. They're saying that high interest rates, people just aren't buying solar right now.
Right.
Storage deployed, so their grid scale storage and their power walls, that kind of stuff, increased 30% year over year to 3,202 megawatt hours. So that's exciting. The battery storage business starting to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
Also had a 25% increase in Tesla locations and a 27% increase in supercharger stations and 29% increase in the actual total number of supercharger connectors, the amount of plugs. So they're now up to 54,892 supercharger plugs around the world.
That's crazy.
That's quite a few.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah.
Wow.
After our scheduled global factory shutdown in Q3, our global production reached a record annualized run rate of nearly 2.0 million vehicles in Q4. The refreshed Model 3 with a significantly quieter cabin, ventilated seats, a screen for the rear seats, longer range, and many other improvements is now available globally. So that refresh of the Model 3 has now come through everywhere. In terms of their market share data, I've chucked in a graph here. Their market share data continues to trend up in the US and Canada. Also in Europe and also in China, which is good to see for them. In terms of operational data, in Q4, they released their latest full self-driving beta software version 12 to select Tesla employees and more recently to customers. Version 12 utilizes end-to-end training, enhancing the driving experience. And they note that it's basically a fundamental rewrite, replacing 330,000 lines of code with neural nets. So, yeah, quite a big step up there. They're on their second generation of their Optimus robot.
the robot.
What else? Sorry, just on the robot.
I saw that was the Tesla robot that was folding the clothes. Is that right? Did you see that video?
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of
funny. I did.
imagine you just buy, like, you're one of the first people to get one of these bots, and I don't know, let's say the... You get like a special early access, you pay like $1 million and it's just folding your clothes. Like that's what you're using it for.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah, I paid for a $100,000 robot just to fold my undies. Oh, wow. So good. Thank you.
Thanks, Tesla.
Can you wipe down the bench too? Yeah. Can you pick up my shoes? Man, $100,000 well spent.
Yeah. It's the robot mum.
Okay. You're right, yeah, essentially. Okay, Hamish, this is where we get to the good part. What was Tesla's outlook? As we were talking before, their outlook up until, well, now has been, 50% compound annual growth? And they see that out into the foreseeable future. Well, guess what, Hamish? They've done away with that. Get rid of it. Maybe they were a little bit too optimistic. I know this blows your mind, Hamish. I know this blows your mind. But they might have been a little bit too optimistic. So they say our company is currently between two major growth waves. The first one being with the global expansion of the 3 and Y platform. And the next one we believe will be initiated by the global expansion of the next generation vehicle platform. In 2024, our vehicle volume growth rate may be notably lower than the growth rate achieved in 2023 as our teams work on the launch of the next generation vehicle at Gigafactory Texas. In 2024, the growth rate of deployments and revenue in our energy storage business should outpace the automotive business.
Whoa.
So that tells you something.
Wow.
Yeah. That tells you something.
Wow.
So they have really reined in expectations for the next year, I think.
Yeah. So, sorry, you had this table here. So what did they in terms of deliveries, they increased by 20% in 2023. Is that right? Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah. In 2020, so hang on, I'll get the actual chart for the whole year. So in 2022, their total vehicle deliveries were 1.3 million and in 2023 was 1.8 million. So they're up 38% year over year.
Right. Okay.
Yep. 38% growth in 2023.
Mm.
Even that misses their 50% growth.
Yeah.
But now they're saying, yeah, actually, we're actually not even going to bother guiding for 50% growth because it ain't going to happen.
Well, I mean, it does just show how quickly things can change, right? It wasn't all that long ago that they were saying, 50% for foreseeable future. And, clearly their numbers, looking at their numbers, they thought that that was probably true. And maybe that will be true again at some point. Who knows? But, it just shows how quickly things can change. But again, as I said at the beginning, not super surprising given the rate rises, I think.
Mm. I also think it's important to remember as investors that naturally, we love this idea of consistency and they got 10 to 15% growth and they've been doing that every year, for the last 10 years. That's amazing. It's so nice and stable and predictable. And that's great. But we also have to remember that in the real world, sometimes that just doesn't happen. Like, I have no doubt that Tesla will have future years where their vehicle delivery growth will, again, jump quite astronomically. But you just have to remember that how lumpy. You really have to zoom out and look over a sustained period of time for something like, you know, a complex manufactured item like a car. Because while they're saying, you know, this year might be down, we're going to be investing heavily and trying to ramp up Cybertruck, and we're also going to be working on our next generation vehicle. You know, once that stuff does ramp up, maybe in the next 2-3 years, then they will experience that massive jump up, but it'll just be lumpy. So you have to kind of think about less in the kind of fund manager mindset of what's happening next quarter. And you have to kind of zoom out, especially with a company like this, and think, where is it trending?
Yeah.
And, you know, sure, some years might be tough because they're working on new things and they're building out new lines and building out new products. But after that, what happens? And you kind of have to think in that kind of sense a little bit more, I think.
Yeah. Do we have anything else on Tesla?
Nope. Take us through Netflix. I want to hear about Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, so Netflix reported their Q4 and full year earnings, and investors in the market was generally very happy with the results, kind of beating general expectations. I think the stock was up about 10%. Let's see what they did. In Q4, they did $8.8 billion in revenue, which was up 12.5% year over year, which is, I think the first time they've been back at double digit growth for maybe 3 or 4 or 5 quarters, where they kind of had that quite dramatic slowdown in subscriber growth. They even had a quarter of subscriber declines, and they've been kind of doing a bunch of things to kind of build up their revenue growth back into double digits. So that was good to see. Netflix's revenue is pretty simple. Kind of growth comes from two places: increases in subscribers and increases in how much each of those subscribers are paying. Sub additions in the quarter was 13.12 million, which was up 12.8% year over year. So an enormous quarter in terms of subscriber growth. Again, it was, I think last year in the same quarter, they did maybe 7 or 8 million. And even that was one of their best quarters ever. I don't think
Where are these subscribers coming from?
Well, that's a good question. So in terms of drivers, they kind of gave a couple of reasons why this is kind of continued. Continued benefits from account sharing crackdowns. So they've kind of still been rolling out, limiting people from sharing between households. And a lot of people are, of course, you know, using that opportunity to sign up for their own account. In terms of their average revenue per member, it came in at $11.31 per month, which is just a 1% increase year over year. They did some price increases and some price decreases. They did price increases in the US, the UK, and France, and they did price decreases in some countries where there's a little bit more price sensitivity to drive growth. It's been pretty clear, I think, so far that there's been absolutely zero pushback on price increases or even the password crackdown, which is, been obviously very good for the business. They, of course, also rolled out the ad-supported tier, which I'll talk about in a little bit. In terms of...
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like people on the password crackdown, people have kicked up a stink being like, oh, that's annoying. But in terms of actual business metrics, it hasn't had much of an impact. it's helped Netflix. It hasn't lost. No one's been like, oh, I'm going to give up Netflix now because they're cracking down on the password sharing.
Yeah, like if you believed like all the social media comments during that time, or even when they do price increases, everyone is like, it's just so expensive, I'm canceling. And I posted on Twitter yesterday. I think maybe some of those people lied because it doesn't look like people are canceling, which is obviously, I think, you know, maybe a good testament to prove that, you know, people enjoy the content on the platform, even if they have to pay a little bit more. Obviously, from a consumer perspective, sure, it sucks that you have to pay a little bit more. But from a business perspective, I think it kind of proves that they've got the content that people want to watch, which is obviously good. For the full year, revenue came in at $33.7 billion, which was up 6.6% year over year. So for the full year, if you're including some of their slower quarters, growth was still kind of in the mid-single digits. Operating margin was 21% versus 18% last year. So pretty consistently, they've just continued to benefit from scale economics. So they've got revenue and revenue per customer growing faster than their content spend and their content spend per customer. And historically, that's kind of added 1-2% to their margins every single year. So it's kind of just been progressively going up in a pretty linear fashion, excluding COVID. And next year, it's kind of no different. They're expecting a 24% operating margin. So another kind of a 3% increase to their margin as they continue to kind of benefit from operating at a larger scale. Operating profit came in at about $7 billion, which was a 23.5% year-over-year increase. And that's where you can see that, you know, benefits, companies that benefit from the scale economics, even though, you know, top line only grows at 6.5%, operating profit grows at over 20% because of that increased efficiency. So that's obviously a good thing for their business. Earnings per share came in at $12.03, which was up 20.9% year over year.
Yeah, cool. That's looking pretty nice.
Yeah, I mean, it was a generally very good year for the business. One of the things I actually really like about Netflix's management team is their press releases have just these long descriptions of what they see going on in the business. Often you don't get that from companies where you get these kind of big kind of outlooks and perspectives on things that are going on. And they spoke about this in the latest quarter. They're planning on ramping their content spend back up to $17 billion, which is what it was before last year. Last year, in 2023, content spend dropped to $12 billion, so they pulled it back quite significantly, and that was really for two reasons. One was they just wanted to wait to see revenue growth reaccelerate before, you know, excessively spending on content. And then the writers and actors strikes played a role as well in that as well, in terms of them having to limit their production for, you know, a considerable portion of the year. But they're looking forward to reaccelerating their content spend next year. They spoke about competition. They're expecting further consolidation from the declining legacy media businesses. So there's obviously been an enormous amount of consolidation, mergers, acquisitions from different media companies over the last decade. And they think that will continue, but they don't think that any mergers or acquisitions will change the competitive landscape, which is a really nice way of them saying they don't think it's really going to help any of these media companies in their, you know, in their situation, or at least that's kind of their view.
Interesting.
Yeah. So they also spoke about what are they focusing on going into 2024. They want to continue scaling advertising revenue, which they said is still a very, very small part of their business. They have 23 million subscribers on that ad plan, which is a small amount, but they also haven't had that plan for all that long. So it's, that's an interesting figure for them to release.
And it's the plan is you still have to pay per month. It's not like completely free, just ad supported. It's like ad supported, but it just makes it cheaper, right?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, they'll be collecting revenue ultimately when they scale and ramp that up. It'll be like a mix of subscribers paying a little bit and then receiving some ad revenue. And their initial numbers seem to think that it will actually do better than just having a basic cheap plan that is ad free, even at a higher price. And they're actually starting to remove their lower plans to kind of push people in one direction, which is pay a premium, you get high quality, more screens, or if you want to be at the low end, you're going to get ads, and they'll be able to generate revenue from the ads. So it seems like they're kind of heading in that direction. They're also testing a bunch of new content verticals. So they're pushing more into live content and sports. They just signed a 10-year deal with the WWE for $5 billion. So starting in 2025, WWE's Raw will be streaming live on Monday nights year-round for a decade. So they secured the rights to that. And it kind of makes sense. I mean, if you look at kind of where people spend their time watching television, most of the viewing time is still on live programming. And a lot of that is things that Netflix doesn't do, which is news and sports. And, you know, WWE is not really a sport, but it's kind of a step in that direction. It's kind of a mix of a sport and entertainment. So they're kind of starting to, you know, test the waters, you know, around what they're doing there.
It's interesting to see the streaming services start pushing into sport.
Mm.
I find that very interesting. It's just something, well, like there's no reason why it can't happen, but it's something that I find, it just feels odd to me. Like I saw that Amazon, they snapped up the rights to the Cricket World Cups until 2027 in Australia.
Mm.
So like that's just going to be so weird to have some of the, like the World Cup being, I don't know. I just find it so strange to think like these places where we get dramas and TV shows and now it's like sports as well. I don't know. It's just odd.
And Netflix hasn't wanted to go into sports because the sports rights have notoriously been extremely competitive, very expensive, and it's not really a good business, but it's kind of like, you can kind of think of it in the same respect as like a grocery store having milk. Like milk is a loss leader for grocery stores. They put it at the back of the store. If you buy just milk, you've made a loss for that grocery store, but they have to have milk so that, because if you don't, why would anyone shop there? And it's kind of the same thing. It's like, if you have sports, it's probably not going to make you a ton of money, but people then might subscribe to your service and watch your other content. So I think given how much time people spend on things like news and sports, you know, it's just a natural progression for Netflix to try and grab more of a larger percentage of people's viewing time. So it kind of makes sense.
I think WWE kind of makes sense, exactly what you're saying. It's like not exactly sport. Mm. It's still more on the drama.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, you know, up Netflix's alley. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a nice like stepping stone. It is live, which they haven't done a whole lot of live content. So that's like a step. And it is, you know, some people consider it a sport. Obviously it's scripted, but, you know, it is like a half step to like having like, I don't know, boxing or cricket or something like that. And then the only other thing I wanted to say on Netflix was they recently started doing a massive data dump on their engagement data. So they now do biannually releases of all of the data on their shows. And basically they're hoping that other media companies will follow for transparency, not just from an investor perspective, but to help ensure that the people working on films, actors, writers can see that they're getting fairly compensated, because there's not much clarity at the moment on how shows are doing on streaming services. So it's hard for them to know, am I getting paid right? Am I getting the right royalties? Does this make sense? Whereas it has been a lot clearer in the past with traditional media to kind of see those things. So they've been releasing their half yearly data. The first half of 2023, Netflix had 100 billion watch hours across their 18,000 shows, which is kind of a pretty interesting stat. And I'd love to see how that compares to, you know, Disney Plus and Max and Paramount.
I would too. Do you ever think we're going to get that?
Nope.
Nope. No. I don't think so.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. I love it that Netflix is like, yeah, we'll show you the data.
Yeah.
Here it is. I don't know why these other platforms aren't showing. Like, come on. Get on there. You know, we show it. And I don't know. They should show it too.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe one day. Maybe one day.
Sign that you're the number one.
Yeah. And then in terms of the US, they had the number one original series, original film, and acquired series almost every week in 2023, which is obviously a nice little achievement as well. So
wow.
So yeah,
that's pretty good.
It's been a good year, I think, for Netflix.
That is quite a good year. Yeah, crazy. Interesting, because it is one of those products that if you're tight on cash, you could just kind of give the flick.
Yeah.
You know, it's not necessary.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like you like what you were saying before. You have to go to the grocery store, right? You have to buy milk. You don't have to buy Netflix, but people still are. So there you go.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, very exciting. Let's move on in that case, Hamish.
Mm-hmm.
To the Boeing 737 MAX.
Oh, Boeing.
Oh, my gosh.
Boeing.
Oh, my God. What is going on here? What is going on? Doors flying off, engines exploding.
Wheels falling off.
What next?
Did you see that one?
Is that really? No?
I think so. I said it to you yesterday.
Oh, wow. Well,
yeah.
Oh, okay. So FAA halts Boeing 737 MAX production expansion, but it clears the path to return the MAX 9 to service. So, the Federal Aviation Administration on Wednesday halted Boeing's planned expansion of its 737 MAX aircraft production, but it cleared the path for the manufacturer's MAX 9 to return to service nearly 3 weeks after a door plug blew out on an Alaska Airlines flight. Quote, "Let me be clear, this won't be back to business as usual for Boeing," said FAA Administrator Mike Whitaker in a statement on Wednesday. Quote, "We will not agree to any request from Boeing for an expansion in production or approve additional production lines for the 737 MAX until we are satisfied that the quality control issues uncovered during this process are resolved." Boeing didn't immediately comment. Its shares were down roughly 4% in after-hours trading after this announcement. Boeing has been scrambling to ramp up output of its best-selling aircraft as airlines clamor for new jets in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. The FAA on Wednesday also said it approved inspection instructions for the MAX 9 aircraft. Airlines had been awaiting that approval to review their fleets to return those planes to service. The FAA grounded the 737 MAX 9 planes after a fuselage panel blew out as Flight 1282 climbed out of Portland, Oregon on January 5th. The grounding forced United Airlines and Alaska Airlines, the two U.S. airlines with the planes, to cancel hundreds of flights. That would be so annoying from the airline's perspective. You have one, it's not even the problem like on your end, it's just the manufacturer stuffing up, and then all of a sudden you have to cancel like hundreds of flights. That would suck.
Yeah, and it's not like they could really blame their choice of plane manufacturer. Like, it's not like, oh, you know, we took a chance on this new guy, you know. Like Boeing's been making planes for a long time. Like, you know.
Yeah, you would have thought they'd get it right. It's
crazy.
That's kind of funny. The CEOs of United and Alaska have expressed frustration with Boeing after the issue, the most serious in a recent spate of apparent manufacturing flaws on Boeing aircraft. The aircraft on Alaska flight was delivered late last year. Wow, I did that late last year. It's not even very old. The FAA is investigating Boeing's production lines after the Alaska flight. Whitaker told CNBC on Tuesday that the FAA will keep, quote, boots on the ground at Boeing's factory until the agency is convinced quality assurance systems are working. He said the agency is switching to a, quote, direct inspection approach with Boeing. This is an interesting, it's very, very interesting because, like, Boeing makes hundreds of aircraft, you know, they're all around the world, you know, it's Boeing, Airbus. Who else is out? The Chinese version. I can't remember what the Chinese manufacturer is called. But there's not that many, you know, major aircraft manufacturers going around, commercial aircraft manufacturers. But it's crazy that, like, you know, if I don't know, what's another? If, like, an Apple laptop, you know, my Apple laptop had some sort of fault or some sort of issue, you know, it wouldn't be a big deal. I just have to go in. They'd probably give me a replacement or fix it for me. But it's funny where in this industry, if like one thing goes wrong on one aircraft, it's like stop everything. Like it has to be because it's like it's dangerous, like human lives at stake and that kind of thing. But it's just so interesting, like how different businesses can be and how different the rules are. It's like one little fault or one thing goes wrong on a Boeing plane, ground them all. We need to check them all. Stop.
I think it's just, it's so concerning that the thing that's kind of concerning for me is that, you know, it's not the first issue. It's not an isolated event. And it's not even the same issue that they've had. These are multiple issues, which kind of suggests there's some kind of systematic failure of safety that's going on in their production, because they're completely different. The other one was a computer issue, right? That was causing the plane to nosedive or something. Like, that is completely different. Yeah. And now they're having doors blow off. It's just, it's like, what's going on at Boeing? I mean, it's crazy. And it is very scary because you expect even Boeing to have, you know, issues from time to time. No one's going to be perfect at manufacturing for like 100 years, let's say. But to, have these back-to-back issues in different, like, departments, or not departments, but, like, different areas is very worrying. So, I hope they are doing direct inspection because clearly Boeing is not doing they're doing something wrong.
It's also interesting that, obviously, you know, similar to how to the automotive industry, the aviation industry is heavily regulated.
Yeah.
Because it's so important to not make any mistakes. So it's kind of interesting that not only has this slipped through the cracks of Boeing's kind of quality assurance testing, but it's also kind of somehow slipped through all the regulation as well.
Mm.
So, yeah. Weird.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about, you know, them saying, oh, we're going to switch to a direct inspection approach. It's like, wait, you weren't doing that before? you were just calling up Boeing, hey, is your plane good? Yep, just plane's good.
Yeah.
Like, what? Doesn't that defeat the whole purpose of the inspection? Hey, Boeing, did you inspect the planes? Yep, yeah, we did it. Like, what? Like,
yeah, all right.
Yeah, whoop.
We'll sign that off. Yeah, no worries. All right. Yeah. GG. Oh, dear. Poor old Boeing. Anyway, and before we move on with this podcast, we do have to say a big shout out to our sponsor for today's episode, Airbus. So Airbus.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Nah, that's all I had to say for Boeing.
Okay.
That's all I had to say. And with that said, I think that is pretty much it for today. That was good. Go through some earnings. I imagine we're going to have more earnings now over the next few weeks. Get to see how 2023 ended up for all the biggest companies.
Yep.
So thanks very much for that, Hamish. Thanks for taking me through Netflix and joining me as always. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for watching along. And with that said, we'll see you guys very soon, I'm sure. We'll see you next week. Actually, we'll see you in a few days' time for our next podcast because we do two a week.
That's
now.
Right.
I've already forgotten, Hamish. There we go. All right.
See you guys.
Interesting outro. See you guys.